Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Getting It Out podcast. That was Ambulance with Hours. The song comes off of their new album, Two, coming out December 15th of this month, because it is December, but it's not yet the 15th. So you can still put it on your calendar. You can be prepared. They are a, what would you call that? Garage punk, synth punk outfit out of Leipzig, Germany. There are four people in that band. And this new record, Two, will be out on It's 11 Records, coming to you very soon, but not too soon, December 15th. I already told you that. Be on the lookout for it. Check it out wherever you can. Listen to it however you like. Again, that song was called Hours, despite the fact that it only took minutes. And you can listen to it for as many times as you like. Put it on a loop. Make it true. Hours, turn it into hours. Turn it into days. Let's make it exhausting. That's up to you, though. You do that on your own time, because for the rest of this episode, I'm going to be having a conversation with Kevin Ruchmanis of Gas War. He's been in a whole bunch of other motherfucking bands throughout the years, and I bet you know him if I'd say him, but I'm not gonna. You're going to have to wait and find out what that means exactly. Does it matter? Probably doesn't, but we'll see. But first, you know we're going over to get some crossover from New Jersey from the brothers in Hot Sun.
Kick it! Getting it out. I said all the places we've been. We're never sitting it out. We'll be getting it in. Why
you back into parking spaces, you should. I encourage everyone to do it. Why? I don't know. It just seems right. Seems like the right way to do things. Back in at all costs. People feel strongly about it. I don't, but I want to do things that makes people feel something, whether it's a appreciation or pure vitriol. Yeah, because that's what backing in and out of spaces can do. Why are people okay with backing into, or I'm sorry, out of a parking space? When people back into a parking space, like, you're holding me up. Hey man, it'll be quicker later. Isn't that the idea? I don't know. It's easier to pull out of a parking space rather than back out. But some people are really bad at backing in. So I kind of get it. But then they back out. So what's the problem? I don't know. You tell me, because I don't see an issue. I just want more chaos in parking lots. This is inspired by a rather chaotic parking lot last night at the gym, which my wife and I attend. And there was just cars everywhere. It was a mess. Ladies parked terribly. Yes, ladies. I'm gonna draw some lines here. Women parked terribly, not even the whole way into the spot. Dudes parked awfully. It's interesting. Guys will park across the lines. Women's will not pull all the way in. It's a weird phenomenon with parking. Why do guys take up too much space laterally? That's not the word. Laterally is not going to be what fits here. And the women don't pull in all the way. And it's just an observation. I'd like some answers. Please have a report on my desk by Thursday morning. Thursday morning, I believe we should know the participants in the semifinals of the NBA in-season tournament. Didn't know that transition was coming, did you? But we do know who won the first two quarterfinal games last night. The Indiana Pacers defeated the Boston Celtics, and I am delighted with that result. And the New Orleans Pelicans took down the Sacramento Kings at home. No light in the beam this week there, Sacramento, huh? So that was interesting to me. Interesting because Sacramento came out to a big lead in the beginning and then squandered it. You can't punch Jonas Valanciunas in the back of the head and get away with it. But that's what happened. I mean, he didn't get away with it. They lost. And now you get to hear me talk about it because I have yet to start Punks and Dunks, a basketball podcast, by getting it out. But I will. Don't worry. It's coming. It's in the works. I need to get a few more pieces. And then we're going to get rolling with that. But for now, you got the classic old Getting It Out podcast. And it's another cool conversation. This one with Kevin Rumanis of Gas War. Have you heard Gas War yet? No, you haven't. Unless you heard two of the singles, which in that case you have. And you could have easily done. The funny thing is this album is nearly 30 years old. And just now, this week, going to see the light of day. You may know Kevin from his previous bands, Cows, The Melvins, and the plethora of other projects he has been a part of and still doing. But this one is special. It's him and a couple of fellas from Hammerhead. And again, late 90s, resurrected to now. Little refurb action and put together, polished up, and ready for your consumption via Rock Is Hell Records. I'm going to play you a track from this record right now. It's the lead-off track. It's called Get Down Moses. And then my conversation with Kevin.
Yeah. you get started down this road anyway? Like, what was the first thing that got you interested in, let's just say, rock music?
Yeah. Well, I lived in Minneapolis, and you know, this is a long time ago, and my brother lived there too, and we were really excited about the new music in the world. You know, that was the earliest days, like, you know, I don't know anything, Dead Kennedys and Minutemen and in town in Minneapolis, Husker Du were playing, and, you know, it was exciting and new. And but there were very few bands in Minneapolis that were, most of the bands to us seemed like they were playing some real middle of the road, just crap we didn't like, you know, basically. Yeah. And so, but we didn't play instruments. I've played music on various instruments my whole life, but never, you know, I started playing piano when I was five, that kind of stuff. But then we were just like, we just wanted to play music, he and I, and we wanted to make the kinds of sounds that we heard. So we just started teaching ourselves how to play. Way back then, it was the earliest day, like the Jayhawks had just started, and you've heard of them, I'm sure.
Sure.
And they were just a local band that had just done a couple shows. And I lived with the bass player, Mark. And they had a practice space, so he would let us go. We'd just go up there and use their space. Me and my brother would just go up there alone and just play all the time. My brother went up there alone and taught himself drums, and I played bass a lot at home, and it just went from there, and I just couldn't stop it after that. It just kept going and going.
So you would say you're self-taught and everything?
Oh, absolutely. There's nobody who would intentionally teach me to do what I do.
Well, it's interesting that it starts with like you and your brother. Was there anybody else in your family, your parents or anybody that was musically inclined or talented?
Oh, you know, they played a lot of like records, like folk music and stuff like that. My dad and my mom for a little while, they played acoustic guitars. Like I remember they watched this lady on educational TV and did guitar lessons through her, you know, and then my dad would sit around and strum, but nothing really hard. They weren't really musicians. They played a little bit. My mom played a little bit of piano, but strictly very part-time, just once in a while kind of thing.
Still, I'd say that's more than most. That's more than most people.
Oh, is it? Maybe it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. Right.
Nobody in my family, I believe, has ever touched an instrument, you know, as far as I know. So.
Well, there you go. I do know that I think it might have been my grandma, actually. They took me to a piano player when I was like 5 years old and got me lessons against the teacher's better judgment, actually. And I liked it right away. And she turned me on. I don't know how this even happened. I've got the old kid's book, really simple piano music, but it was weird contemporary people like Bartok. And my mom said, she said, you took to that stuff right away. You liked the weird kind of discordant stuff when you were five.
And it kind of carried on for the rest of time, right?
I guess so. It's probably some sort of genetic mutation, brain damage.
Right. Well, it's worked out for you pretty well, I'd say.
Yeah, I'm happy about it.
Yeah. You know, we could all be happy with what cards we were dealt, you know? Just learn to accept them.
I'm lucky. I'm lucky that I'm happy with it.
That's true. So when does it start to take off? And I mean take off in terms of like get you're fully in the swing of things. Like making music is your prime driver. It's the thing that you're doing every day.
That happened very early on in the cows. My brother and I, the second we started playing together, we started doing it a lot. And I didn't even realize till much later, looking back on it, just how much the cows rehearsed. We just did it because it was so fun, you know? So we were doing 5-6 hour rehearsals with the lights off 3-4 times a week, just because we thought it was super fun.
Why the lights off?
Oh, partly possibly because of drugs.
Okay.
And it was just super fun. And we all really... Thor, the guitar player, was someone I knew. I recognized him at college one day from third grade summer school we had together. I don't know
how you do that.
And I walked up to him and I said, "Are you Thor?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I told him, he couldn't believe it. I was like, "Jesus Christ, you know, third grade summer school." But he must have left an impression on me. And then Shannon was a friend, you know, I'd just known him forever. And originally our friend Norm sang before Shannon, and he played drums actually originally for the Jayhawks. And then he sang with us for not very long. I don't think he enjoyed it. And then Shannon was sort of waiting on the side for his chance to jump in. And actually Norm became our drummer. He was a great drummer. So we just went from there. But really early on in the Cows, we made a record because that's why I brought up rehearsing so much. I think we were probably musically, even though it was so challenging, shall we say, for everyone, we knew what we were doing, even though we didn't know we knew what we were doing.
That's and interesting. It went very That's quickly. A good way to look
I think
at
we recorded, I don't think we'd, I think we'd have been together maybe a year when we recorded our first record, maybe less, 9 months or something.
You put out a lot of records with Cows.
We did, I think, 7.
Yeah. And how many years was that over?
About 10, maybe.
That's pretty prolific is the word that I like.
Yeah. And now I do way more than that, even.
I know your personal discography is exhausting, but that's one of the very cool things. That's I'm trying to move through some of it here.
Yeah. 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 I just, I don't even really notice it. I mean, it's not like, oh, I got to do it more. I like doing it. I do it kind of daily. And I think it's just a time that I feel I'm okay.
Yeah. You know, has, I feel okay when I'm like, doing this. Yeah, sure. I totally get that. Has it been like that since Cows?
Kind of. Now with computers and stuff, I can kind of constantly record and arrange and mix. But with them, I mean, I played at home, you know, pretty much all the time, just because it was new and I really loved it. I still play a lot, but not like I did then. Mm-hmm. Like it was kind of all day, every day. And I remember one time Shannon came over to get me for a rehearsal and I was playing. You practice at home? I could play. Like, yeah, all the time, dumbass.
That's good. Nonstop. I like it. It was a healthy obsession.
Yeah, it was just fun. It was the one thing I really enjoyed doing, you know?
That's awesome. Well, tell me about that Minneapolis back then. Was there like mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's glamorized now, but it seems like that was something of a scene back then. What was happening? Yeah. How was it? How would you describe it?
There were, you don't know if you're not somewhere else, but they're looking back. So many bands that were interesting, you know, because like I said, playing, we were kind of frustrated that there wasn't really anything interesting. And then after a while, there was a lot of bands. It didn't necessarily mean I liked them all, but they weren't boring. People were really willing to try stuff, all kinds of weird stuff. And this would have been, you know, I guess the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And there were clubs you could play. You could, you know, they would let all kinds of weirdos play. And there's this place, I'm sure you've heard of First Avenue because of Prince. Mm-hmm. But there's a big club, First Avenue, and then connected right there, you can go through a door into a little bar next door called 7th Street Entry. And they had a stage and they had bands in there and it could hold, I don't know, I'm guessing maybe a couple hundred people. And they had new band night, 5 bands you'd never heard of. And it was, I mean, we went all the time just to listen to all the music. And there was a couple other bars that did the same thing. And I was just thinking about this the other day because things were so different. I was just going down to those bars during the day and nagging for shows, you know, just kind of all the time, calling, go down there in person and just nag.
Do you happen to like have an idea why it was thriving so well in Minneapolis at that time?
I don't know if there's a reason. If it could be just one of those, you know, just confluence of time and people. There was a real music explosion in the U.S. then.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, all this music was unlike anything anyone had ever heard. And it was all being put out by people that were avoiding. It kind of was, if you could tour a lot, you would get at least some attention. You know, so it was more way more meat and potatoes, for lack of a better word, kind of grassroots. You got a really crap van and you didn't have jobs and you were irresponsible and a danger to society. And you jumped in a van and just drove all over the country over and over again. And if you were doing anything even slightly interesting, there were scenes everywhere. People went to shows, you know, not to say we didn't play hundreds of shows to zero to two people. That happened also.
Yeah.
But, it was just part of the deal. And all shiftless bums, essentially. I guess, well, not all of us. Me and Shannon were.
It's such an interesting time to me because I was very young then, but I was old enough. I was 10 years old, but I was old enough to listen to the radio, know what was happening like mainstream. And in hindsight, that music was so heavy and weird that was being played on the radio. So if that's surface level, you just have to dig a little bit deeper. And I'm sure it was, like you're saying, all over the place, everywhere.
It was crazy. There were so many bands that I still really like that were, there was no way to know about them unless you dug around or heard about them from your friends. They weren't on the radio. They weren't on TV. There wasn't an internet. And there were a lot of us willing to do that, you know? Buzz in the Melbourne's and I've talked about that a lot because we were both kind of isolated hick town. And we'd read these, there were fanzines going around. There wasn't that many of them. And you'd read or else read liner notes on a record you liked and go find the name, the person whose name was on there, you know?
Oh, the thanks list.
Yeah. Or just, I don't even know. Like I was just thinking just today, I was like, how did we find, are you familiar with Fetus? The different Fetus. Yeah. The first one we knew about was the Scraping Fetus Off the Wheel record. And it just, I think I just saw the cover. That was the other thing, was the willingness to just try it. And you could tell from the covers what was going to be something different and what was going to just be the mainstream stuff. And you just bring it home and go, holy shit. It was so long ago. I think I wrote my brother a letter and said, you got to check out Fetus.
I often talk about how I feel like I just turned 39, right? So I grew up.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But I grew up in the pre-internet era and caught the beginning of the internet. So to me, buying music was like you're talking about. It was looking through thanks lists. It was just buying CDs off the shelf, without hearing them, just off of what section they were in, what they looked like. And then when I was older in college, I got to use the internet. So for me, I feel like a really spoiled generation that I got to experience both types of
music discovery. Me too. I mean, that's just how
it works.
Before DJs, vinyl was, I would just go down to the low, because there were these huge, huge used vinyl sections, and the records were $1, $1.50 at the most, and it didn't matter what it was. Mm-hmm. They weren't really different prices. So, I mean, I was talking, I remember the Miles Davis section was huge. So I would just buy these five Miles Davis's records today. That'll be $8. Okay. You know, and they might be beat up or whatever, but I mean, I was constantly buying these nickel and dollar records and just based on nothing on the cover, you know, or you could go to, just really shitty used shops. And there'd be just piles of record laying on the, not even standing up on their spines, but laying in big stacks. And I just load up. I remember I used to go to a place in the middle of nowhere in Minnesota. It was like a dime a record.
Fine. Oh God, you never find that now.
The records. No. That's how I discovered Thelonious Monk. I'd never heard of him. I didn't know anything about him. I bought 20 records for $2, went home. It was that Sphere record. Monk's Dream. And I played it and I just, I couldn't believe it. It was just a dime, you know? How would I have ever heard that? I went to library to find music.
Well, since you've brought up a few jazz artists here, I need to stop you and ask you about something. Because I myself just turned off Coltrane's Blue Train before we started talking. And I am not a jazz person at all, though I've been trying to make myself one. I've been reading books. I've been buying records. I'm doing it all. Yeah. What to you are the essential jazz records and what styles?
Oh man, that's such a giant continent.
Of course, but today I listened to Freddie Hubbard's Red Clay for the first time and I thought it was awesome.
I know that record, yeah.
And that's an expensive record to find still. And see, yeah, anyway.
Well, that's the other thing though. You can find MP3s so easily. Mm-hmm. And then they're free.
I
do a lot of it is finding rare or hard to find records on YouTube, and I just download them from there. Mm. It's a good way to get records that I'll never be able to get otherwise.
I
used to have a Victrola, and you could get boxes of 78s for nothing. And so I would buy, and a lot of those were big band and jazz. And I started with big band. I really liked big band. And like you, I read some big band books, and you could find those 78s and the used LPs for a song, you know. And of course, some of it I really, really liked. It just went from there. Like I said, I found Monk totally by accident. Cool cover, never heard of him. Ooh, this is something.
Cool name,
I was
too.
Pretty open-minded, which helps.
Yeah, Thelonious Monk is a cool name too, I think, you know.
Right?
He's got it all. Yeah.
And also those, and then like the 70s jazz, you know, I just remembered I had, when I lived at home with my parents, I bought a Diodato record. I was probably 15 or 16, you know. I guess I started pretty early. I didn't really think about it. I pretty much just have always
done. Hey, there's so much cool stuff out there to discover. And
more and more, I just can't believe how much music has been recorded. It's just crazy how many musicians have ever existed. It's nuts.
Well, when there's people like yourself out there putting out albums year after year after year after year, it makes it a little difficult. You're contributing to the
I'm making a pile.
Of course, Cows was there in the beginning, and then Gas War happens, right? Do I have that right?
Yeah, it was weird. It was Gas War and Hammerhead were really good friends. We toured together. We went to Europe together. We hung out together. We listened to music together, went to bands together. And then I don't even remember how it came up, but Paul and Jeff, who were the Apollo and Jeff, the bass player and the drummer for Hammerhead, and I mean, we hung out all the time. And somehow we ended up starting to kind of jam together just for the fun. The songs came together really quickly. And we played a few shows live, and we recorded with this guy, Mike Wistey, who lives in Minneapolis, and I have total like running long extended cables from the kitchen down to the basement kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And standing in the kitchen with the amps in the basement, that kind of thing. Recorded it. He mixed it. It still needed vocals on most. And it just never came out. We just never finished it up. I joined the Melvins, and Hammerhead broke up and became, it just stuff moved on. You know, it wasn't our primary thing for any of us. And every few years I'd hear it and I'd go, oh, we got to finish this, you guys. And they'd go, yeah. Another few more years came by. And then just, God, it couldn't have been, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, you know, it came up on my iTunes or on rotation. I mean, and it's like, fuck, I still really like this stuff.
So what was it? What did you have recorded? What were you listening to?
It was the record that came out, only it only had vocals on two songs and or even just one song. And it was pretty much just rough mixes of me, of the music, most of the music. And I thought these songs are really good. And I think my wife Jean even said, you know, she hadn't heard it, and she said, this stuff's really good. You should see if you can do anything with it. And I talked to those guys a lot anyway, and I just contacted them. I just said, hey, I'm just going to finish these if that's okay with you guys and see what you think. And they said, sure, you know, and I'd send them each one I do, I'd send it to them, not mixed or anything. Like I added vocals and then a few overdubs, some noises or some guitar or something like that. And I'd send them each one, make sure it was cool. And then Paul found another one he had sung. That was really, he's a great singer. So it was really good. So we took that and I just did it that way. And they liked all the songs. And then the guy who runs Rock as Hell, he's in Austria, and he's been putting out the my other records, the Hepatitis records, for a long time. Great guy. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, I got this Gas War stuff. And he's like, I have a really full schedule next year. I don't think I can do it. And then I sent it to him. I was like, I'm going to have to do it. I really like it. So we we've, and that wasn't even mixed yet, I don't think. And then, so there's this guy here in town, Jim, he calls himself Suedo. Do you, is it Pseudo or Suedo? Pseudo Beast? Pseudo,
I
think, right?
With a P?
Yeah.
Pseudo, yeah.
Pseudo, yeah. You'd think by now I could pronounce it. Pseudo Beast. But anyway, he's mixed my other stuff. He's just an amazing, great, he's really good at it. He's done it a long time. He did that. What was it? He did that last Dead Cross record, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
He's done a lot of stuff. He's great. And he said, yeah, I'll happily do it. And because the bass, drums, guitar was already, I didn't have separate tracks. So he calls it fluffing. He fluffed the EQ. And then we recorded the stuff. Jeff played some more drums on one song that didn't have drums on it yet. We just patched it together and Jim did his thing. I just, pseudo beast. I just turned him loose. You know, he's so good. And he did his thing and it came out great. And then, Rock as Hell is coming out, I think, a couple weeks or something.
Yeah. Next week, next Friday, it'd be.
Yeah. And I really like it. It's, I think I stand by it. Even though it's so old, I stand by it. And hopefully we'll be able to tour.
How old is it exactly?
90s. Late 90s. Except late 90s? It's not, because a bunch of the stuff was added just in the last few months. A lot of the vocals, some guitars, some drums, lots of stuff. So it's kind of half and half.
It existed between your time in Cowles and the Melvins, right? That's mostly where it was?
Just the basic tracks did.
Yeah.
Instrumentally, basically, not even all the instrumental, just the most basic instrumental.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
That's interesting. That's very cool that you held on to
the music. Yeah, I'm surprised I still have it too. I'm just as surprised as you are.
Well, so you mentioned that a lot of the songs are missing vocals. Does that mean that lyrics and all that shit was done now recently?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Two of the songs Paul had already sang impeccably, I might add. And then, at least one of the, in a sense, I'd say actually three of them had vocals. I forgot about one of them. So whatever that leaves, five or six needed vocals. And yeah, there was no lyrics. I just kind of patched it to. Lyrics are easy. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
What are you putting in songs? What are you lyrically putting in songs? Why are they easy? Explain that to me.
Probably because I have a lot of disconnected words constantly floating through my mind.
Unstable connection.
It is. I'm probably picking up other people's transmissions constantly. And, you know, my phone is full of things that pop into my head because I write lyrics for my other bands too, you know, so that I've got shit everywhere, just sentences, particles, ideas. Mm-hmm. And then often my first pass vocally is the best because Before I work it out, then I'm just grabbing melodies and phrases and just doing them what comes naturally. And it's usually a much more interesting rhythm and just the pattern than would happen if I kept pounding it out. I would eventually just shuffle the deck into like a regular, normal arrangement. But if I catch the first or second one, it's usually more interesting and stranger.
Does that
make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does.
But it's same thing with guitar parts. The more I, not always, but if I keep, I often go to early recordings to learn the way I originally did it, because if I keep pounding away at it, it starts to get more and more predictable. Whereas my first or second blush tends to be more free and lyrical, shall we say.
Makes sense. I think so. I think for sure.
I mean, that doesn't work for everyone, believe me.
Oh, no. I don't think that would work for me, but I can I can understand how it might work for you. Yeah. Speaking of coming up with shit, meanings, things, what is this album title, Girl Vanishes on Way to Jive Club?
You know, it's just an old thing from England. It's a newspaper headline from a horrible crime that happened in the 60s. But at that point, they didn't know it was a horrible crime yet. And a not very old young girl just disappeared on her way to a jive club, whatever the hell that is. It's a nice sentence. I found it and I ran it by those guys. I don't think I even explained it. And they were just like, oh yeah, that's cool.
You know what's funny about that sentence? And it just made me think of this, that headlines often don't make sense as sentences. That doesn't make sense as a sentence. Girl vanishes on way to jive club. Does it? Oh.
I know exactly what you mean, and they're worse now. I mean, like when I saw that sentence, at least I knew what they were talking about. And like right. I read news online a lot, and I just look at the headline and I was like, I have no idea what this even means. It's strange, you're right. It's a strange code, kind of.
Yeah, like we all know what we can get an idea. It gives you the, I don't know. It's more about here's what this is about more than right. This makes sense.
Yeah. It's
read more.
And it's hard not to find the saying jive. I liked it because it's kind of charming and silly, but then I know that it's about something really awful. So it's a funny two-layered thing.
Well, that word vanishes is kind of tricky, you know?
Yeah, that's a bad sign. But then it's offset by jive club, which, you know, sounds pleasant, very nice. A jive club. I'm going to the jive club tonight to jive.
As one will do at a jive club.
As one does. It's in the 60s. So in London, who the hell knows what a jive club was in the 60s? Could be anything.
They might still have them.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, all right. So when you kick this thing up and you got it re-going again, that's certainly not a word itself, re-going. You got it going again.
yet I understood it.
Yeah, exactly. There's a theme here tonight. And you, I think you just briefly said something about you might even want to tour on this.
Yeah, we'd love to. It's just, you know, it's just logistics. And it's not like the old days when we used to do it where you just called a bunch of clubs around and they said, sure. You know, it's just, and then after the pandemic, so many places closed. Mm-hmm. So we're still trying to iron out how the hell we would even do that. But I'm hopeful that we could figure it out. I wouldn't mind going to Europe too.
Yeah. You know, I'm certain you've played through your time in the Melvins, maybe even Cal's, the venue that was here that closed during the pandemic. It was around for like 30 years, the Chameleon
What's
Club. And now
what's it called?
The Chameleon Club.
Oh, yeah.
I know for a fact Melvins have played there, and there's certain, over and over. But anyway,
I even remember the name.
That was a victim of the pandemic, and now there is a piece of the stage on my wall in the garage. Yeah. But yes, to your point, yeah, a lot of venues are kaput.
They're just gone, and the mechanics are gone. It's just a different way of doing it. The Melvins were nice enough to take Hepatitis on a few tours, you know, and that was great for us. But I don't know how else we'd really do it. So maybe I don't know. We'll figure something out.
Sure, certainly. I think you've got the know-how. You've been around long enough to get it done, right? You got the skills.
I've been around long enough to know how everything. I just know everything.
Yeah. When you mentioned like having this material sitting around waiting, mm-hmm. What does that mean? Hard drive.
No, it was in my actual computer. I just move music from computer to computer. I just always move everything over. But I have so much music in my computer that I don't know if I would have remembered if this would have happened if it hadn't come up on random shuffle. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck. And I put it on my phone and kept listening to it. Then I found the other songs and put them all on there. I was like, I really like this. You know, it's hard. It's hard to know if you're tricking yourself or not.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
I saw Paul Leary say from the Butthole Surfers that listening to your own music is like smelling your own farts. You're the only one who thinks it's good.
Yeah, but sometimes you got to waft them, you know? Sometimes they deserve a waft.
Sometimes who knows? Someone out there might like it.
that's true and disgusting, but you know.
Just ask Chuck Berry.
Yeah. Well, when I look at this record, of course, now I see this album artwork that you've got for it. And it's a confusing maze to look at. Tell me about this. Is this new or is this from back then as well?
Oh, the art's new. My wife, Gina, who goes by the artist's name, Mouse Squaz, and she's a really good artist. She does a lot of my artwork. And that was, she'd done these pieces that were based on, on the cards that are in airplanes showing you, you know, what position to take when it's going to crash and all that stuff. And she made a bunch of pieces out of those that are really cool. And I think, I'm not sure about this. I think on the computer, we overlapped them. So it's different images overlapping.
Yes.
Oh, it might've been from a video where we ran several of them at once. So that's why it's confusing looking. It's a few different, and then she colored it how she wanted it to look. So that's why it's confusing looking. Yeah, I mean that
in a good way. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's fine. I think it suits the whole idea of gas war and the music, and it fits.
It does. I like it.
Do you know what a gas war is?
No, I don't. That was going to be my next question. What is a gas war?
Well, it's a very old Midwestern, I think it might have been just the Midwest, probably the South too. We're all from the Midwest, like the hickiest of the Midwest. And a way long time ago, probably when we were kids, there used to be this thing that would happen. Like there'd be two gas stations across the street from each other. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden you'd see these big, bright colored pieces of cardboard and they'd handwrite in marker on them, "Gas war!" And then the two... They both try to have lower price than the other place. 17 cents a gallon, 16 cents a gallon, like that. And that was a gas war.
That's like the total opposite of what when I hear gas war, I think about like oil war and we're just going to go to the Middle East.
Exactly. And I think that's what everyone does. Yeah. That's what everyone does. It's kind of like the album title. It sounds like one thing, but there's something weird beneath it.
Yeah, your gas war, the Midwest gas war, sounds awesome. And I wish they would do a lot of them.
It's super goofy, small town kind of thing. But yeah, it is us. And strange, very strange. Those days are obviously way behind us. And you're right. It sounds more like the Middle East or something.
Yeah. That goes to show. I mean, you got to dig a little deeper sometimes because I had pretty negative expectations just from the name Gas War.
Well, I think everyone does. It's not weird that you thought that.
Yeah, the word war will do that. Yeah.
And the word gas.
Throw some gas on it, literally. And
So I think it's reasonable that that's what you thought. We can be a little obscure.
That's true. That's good. Obscure is good. The record's been, it's not officially out yet. I know that, but I've been listening to it.
It will be any minute. Yeah.
But I've been listening to it for quite a while and I'm sure other people's have. What has been, and I'd imagine someone like you is not too concerned about it, but what has been the feedback you've heard for this material? And I only ask that because it's been sitting for so long.
Right. I haven't heard that much because as you say, you know, it isn't really technically out yet, but I haven't, no one's bitched, you know, no, it's been positive, really positive, which is always nice. Everyone likes everyone likes having sunshine blowing up their skirt.
Sure.
But, it's been positive so far. So good. And like you say, after you do a few million records, it only has so much impact when people shit on you.
Has there ever been like I will say criticism to be polite. Has there ever been a criticism from a critic review, whatever, a fan that you've really read or taken in and thought, okay, that's a good point, and actively changed something because of it?
No, never. It's funny to even hear someone say that out loud. That's preposterous. No, that's never. That's never occurred to me. I mean, it sounds like a good idea, but no, I've never done that.
I love it. That's a real answer, and I appreciate that.
Usually, well, usually when people, especially if they're extreme negative comments, it's hard to even just take it seriously. It's like, you know, it is just a record, right? Mm-hmm. And fans are once in a while, more in the early days, and say, I liked your last record better. You just go, you should go buy it and stop talking to me right away. You know, that kind of thing. It wasn't really, it's hard to take seriously. I'm confident enough in my stuff that, confident meaning not that it's great, but that it's what I intend it to be. So second guessing doesn't really, I mean, I've had friends say, oh, I can't believe you put that song on the record. And I'm still like, well, that's a pity. You know, I feel pretty confident about what I've done as far as being the right choices.
Right. Is that something that had to come with age?
Externally, it was always like this. Probably you're right that inside, I'm sure, bothered me more at first. But I mean, the cows learned almost immediately that people were not. I remember people waiting for us live. I remember a girl in Madison, Wisconsin, standing there for our entire set. There was hardly anyone there, standing there right in front of the stage waiting so that when we got off stage, she said, you guys were terrible. And it's hard not to just feel pretty good about that, you know? Like, wow, you waited a whole hour and then standing in that shit storm of sound to tell us that. That's fantastic. It's hard not to think you did something right.
That's a great perspective.
Yeah. By the same token, the other side of that is we played some of the cows again somewhere in the south. I don't remember. It was like this big outdoor like rodeo arena, and there was a couple there. I happen to remember. No one else did our show. They sat way up away from us. And years later, that guy showed up somewhere and said, "Hey, we saw that show. That was one of the best shows I ever saw." So I mean, that's the other side of it. You're like, "Wow, that's kind of great."
Yeah, you know, I've myself experienced some of those shows. And I went to a show once, and I'll spare the people in it that were in the band, but they're some pretty pretty well-known musicians in underground music, and they were doing this one-off project.
Yeah.
And it wasn't well-received, but a friend of mine beside me said, you know, I feel like this is going to be one of those shows where we can say, I'm glad I was there. And like in hindsight, I'm totally sure. Glad I was there. Like it was very few people have seen this lineup of people do this thing. And while it wasn't that great, it was just such an interesting experience.
Sure. Still, I've seen a lot of shows that I thought were just terrific that were super chaotic, everything going off the rails. So the band was very depressed and sad. And I'd just be like, you guys don't realize that was so good. Just out of control. But I'm a fan of chaos. Maybe that's why. But I've really enjoyed some shows like that. Like you say, that it's weird and strange, but really can be a lot of fun.
Sure. Well, speaking of fun, what's your plans musically going forward in the near future? Like, what can you speak about that you expect to happen or do, next year?
I'm in the middle of right now. Shouldn't be too long. I mean, it won't come out till next year, but I have a strange outfit called Lords and Lady Kevin. I don't know if you knew about that. And
I don't know. Tell me about it.
It's on Bandcamp. It's me and my wife. And also it was David Livingstone from the God Bullies, but he passed away, much to our horror. But you know, these things happen. And so we're still going. We've put out a shit ton of records and we got a band cap, but we're working on one. And then, you know who Trevor Dunn is? Sure you do.
Yes. Yeah.
I did a record with him maybe a year or two ago, done with Ritmanis or something like that. It was a lot of fun. Good record. And, he just got a hold of me. He's just like, hey, let's do a Done with Lords and Lady Kevin. So super pleased. I was like, hell yeah. So it's just about done. So that's a full LP that will come out probably and hopefully in the first part of the next year.
So you got that. Is there, I don't know, is there any plans to do more Gas War music?
It's already been brought up several times. Like, okay, on the next record, we should do this or that in vague terms. Everybody's excited. So that's a good sign. So I would say yes.
That's cool. Very cool. Very cool that you were able to unearth this project and make good on it.
I really appreciate that. And I appreciate that you're showing some interest. It's good. I think it's good. Do you like it? Do you like the record?
I do. I do, actually. Oh. I like it very much. And one thing I always do like to ask people when they're releasing a new record, and like I said, maybe for you it might be different given your several albums into your life. But, and actually, this will be a nice question for all of the records you ever released. What is the most exciting thing to you about releasing a new record?
I really like to, it's weird. It's sort of like, it's a little bit obsessive compulsive. I feel really weird if I don't have something I'm finishing up. Mm-hmm. So I get a lot of pleasure out of whatever it is, a video or right when it's done, that first week or two is a great feeling. It doesn't even really have to do with how everyone receives it or anything. It's just that I've made something and then I get to, and then I really enjoy the I really enjoy the shit out of it when it's first done. And then I've never listened to it or look at it again.
Not true, or else this record wouldn't be coming out.
Yeah. I have an ongoing need where I'm like, I don't feel right. I need to, maybe if I made some, you know. I mean, I'm pretty much always doing music or making a video that goes with some music or something like that, you know, pretty much daily. And it's just, that's when it feels perfect. I love the whole process. I love recording. I love editing. I love mixing. I love playing live. I'm like the guy that I like every step of it. The pinnacle is right when it's done. It's not even come out yet. And I just listen to it or look at it for a couple of weeks. I'm like, I made this. And then I have to do another thing or I feel weird.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with Kevin Rudmanis of Gas War. The song you just heard was Terrible Day to Have Eyes, of course, off of the nearly 30-year-old debut album, Girl Vanishes on Way to Jive Club, out December 8th via Rock Is Hell Records. Go get it immediately. Track it down. Find it. Look under rocks. Dive in the nearest stream. Can you dive in a stream? Probably not deep enough. You should give it a shot, though. You might find it's deeper than you think. I don't know enough about the ecosystem or structure of stream to move forward with this thought. We're at a dead end. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that conversation, as I very much did. It was a total pleasure to talk to Kevin, a very funny guy with lots of humor and experience in the world of underground music. So thanks to him for his time. Thanks to you for your time, for listening, for joining me, especially for listening this far into the podcast. I want to tell you to go to gettingitout.net, check out what's going on over there. Got my ass in gear a little bit and did some updates over the weekend. And there's a new around here article up, and there's a new one hot on the heels behind it. I'm going to take you through some bands right now that I'm going to feature in the very near future. We got Farsoth, Blow Your Brains Out, Lies, Alluvial, Mr. Bison, Sentinel, Jarhead, Fertilizer, Soul Incursion, and the classic, The Obsessed, fronted by Scott Wino Weinrich. Those are all to come. You'll get there. Don't worry, we're all going to make it. Somehow we'll do it. But that is going to be it for this episode of the podcast. I'm going to leave you with another track from the Burn on the Bayou compilation, which is coming out this Friday, December 8th on Ripple Music. I played one last week from High Priestess. This one is from Boston's Kind, a band who I really enjoy. They had a great record out earlier this year. But now you're going to hear their cover of CCR's Heard It Through the Grapevine. Now, if you're not familiar with what this is a basically doomed out version of all the CCR hits, Burn on the Bayou, out this Friday, December 8th, Ripple Music. This is Heard It Through the Grapevine, covered by Boston's Kind. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.